Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. Let's get straight to the docket today. First, the court issues some order in the Vallo and Daybell matter. Second, a Tennessee grandmother charged with theft and pawning items. Third, judge doubles down on airing the trial of the defendants on trial for the George Floyd matter. Fourth, a paralegal who leaked sealed documents in the Gannon Stout case pleads guilty and gets sentenced. A 12-year-old brave young woman. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. We will go live tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. We'll probably be talking about the first matter on the docket today. That's right, the order that the court issued in the Vallo and Chad Daybell matter. Let's get straight to it. Now, we've talked a lot about the Lori Vallo and Chad Daybell matter and the legal maneuvering that the attorneys have been trying to do on behalf of the defense. I think it's made them look a little silly, but the court has issued an order, and I think that my conclusions will be that of the court as well. The court issued an order late yesterday afternoon saying that they held an expedited hearing regarding the state's motion for a judicial protective order, as well as the protective order that was filed by Mr. Means, basically requesting that the prosecutor in this case, Mr. Wood, not have any further involvement or do any further work on this case whatsoever until they were to have a full hearing in regards to whether the prosecutor should be disqualified. And the prosecutor's motion for protective order was basically saying no one should be releasing any of this information. It's just going to prejudice everybody. The court denied that request as well. So what are we set with now? Well, we were supposed to have a hearing set for January 6th of 2021, obviously in a couple of weeks, in regards to the change of venue and the motion to dismiss as it relates to probable cause. The court vacated those hearings, and now there's going to be a hearing regarding the motions to disqualify the prosecuting attorney. Now, why are we having a hearing if the court has already denied the motion for the protective order, telling the DA that he can't work on this case any further? Well, sometimes judges, and as well as the prosecutor, need to make a record so that the record is complete. When parties go in and talk to the judge, what they're telling the judge is not evidence. It's what they refer to as a proffer. Judge, we are proffering to you that if we were to call a witness, this is what they would say. Sometimes that's enough for the judge. Other times the judge wants to have evidence so that the record is clear. Now, that is very important in a case like this, because when you have Mr. Wood making comments to family members of Lori Vallo that her attorney's not that very good, and to use his words, not competent, since he's never handled a felony matter. So if Lori Vallo is convicted after a trial, she would also have post-conviction rights related to effective assistance of counsel. Well, if post-conviction motions were filed saying, my attorney was ineffective, it's kind of tough for the district attorney to say, oh no, you had a fair trial, your attorney was great, when he said that he wasn't. So they need to get this issue resolved. They need to decide who's going to be on this case once and for all. I've stated before, and you can see the videos that we've talked about the last couple of days, I don't think that the motion has much evidentiary foundation, at least based upon the transcript that was sent to me. I take it at face value that it's accurate and correct because it was accompanied by an affidavit by the attorney that made the recording. The attorney who recorded the call did state that the transcript was not complete, but only of the first 18 minutes of the conversation. Now, unless there's something that has not been transcribed and that we have not seen, I don't believe that there's anything in there that's going to disqualify Mr. Wood from prosecuting this particular case. Now, the other issue that I find interesting is to whether the hearing on January 6th will be closed. Now, the prosecution and Chad Daybell, through his attorney, Mr. Pryor, requested that the hearing be closed. Defendant Vallow objects to the closure of the hearing. Now, the court says that they've taken the issue under advisement and the parties may submit written supplemental argument and or authority on the issue of closing the hearing. Any of that supplemental authority has to be to the court no later than December 30th. This gets into a very tricky area, and we'll talk about it as well later in the docket here today. But courtrooms are supposed to be public courtrooms. Very limited circumstances under which a courtroom should be closed to the general public. We don't conduct criminal proceedings in private. I think that the court is actually going to err on the side of caution and go along with Mr. Means in this particular case, because courts have had very serious cases reversed when they have cleared the courtroom. For example, when a child were to testify, when victims of assault have testified. Okay, maybe in a juvenile proceeding, the courtroom can be cleared when they think it's going to be sensitive matters, but not in a criminal case. Everyone is entitled to an open public forum for their hearings as well as their trial. And when courts start limiting that, guess what? You're violating the defendant's constitutional rights as well as the public's right to know as to what's taking place. Things just don't get done behind closed doors in criminal cases. So I'm actually going to have to agree with Mark Means on his objection as it relates to this particular issue. We call it the way we see it, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, a woman steals her grandchildren's Christmas presents and then sells them at a pawn shop. That's right, a Tennessee grandmother is facing theft charges after stealing and pawning off a Christmas gift that was meant for her grandchild. The gift was stolen from under the family Christmas tree, prompting the victims to contact the sheriff. After an investigation was done, they determined that Amy Best stole a Nintendo Switch from her grandchild and sold it to a local area pawn shop. Ms. Best, who will give the presumption of innocence, was taken into custody and charged with theft under $1,000, and her bond was set at $7,500. She still remains there in custody, not sure if the family's going to come to her aid and help bail her out, but not good when the bond is higher than the value of the item stolen. Now, obviously, it's Christmas, and nobody wants to be judged at their worst moment when they do something like that. Certainly, we hope that people wouldn't do that such a thing. However, you never know exactly what was going on, where the grandmother thought that she needed this money so desperately that she would steal Christmas gifts that were meant for her grandchild. Now, maybe if she needed it to, I don't know, put food on the table, perhaps maybe pay a rent, a little bit of mitigation there. But if she was going to use it for gambling, drugs, certainly that's an aggravator in this particular case. Let me know what you think. Obviously, we don't know all the circumstances, and given it's Christmas, we'll give Grandma the benefit of the doubt. Next on the docket, a Minnesota judge doubled down on his earlier decision to broadcast the trial of the former Minneapolis police officers charged with the alleged murder of George Floyd. Now, the prosecutors, led by the state attorney general, Keith Ellison, had argued before Judge Peter Cahill that the November 4th order violated the plain language of the rules that require testimony of most adult witnesses without consent, and similarly made available live audio feed of testimony by minor witnesses and Floyd's family. Cahill, in a very short memorandum, and this is the way judges do these kinds of things. Judges usually don't change their mind unless there's some compelling issue. But this is the court's order. It says the state filed a brief and attachment in support of its motion to reconsider on November 25th. Defendants Chauvin, Tao, Koenig filed briefs in opposition to the state's motion on December 14th, and Tao also filed an attachment. The Media Coalition filed a brief in opposition to the state's motion on December 14th, 2020, supported by declarations by Grace Wong and Suki Darden. Based upon the files, records, and the proceedings, the court makes the following. The court affirms its original order of November 4th, 2020, and denies the motion insofar as it requests the court to modify its original order allowing audio and video coverage of the joint trial. The attached memorandum and the order is incorporated herein. Now, that's the way a judge does things, all right? Judges don't let things turn into a circus. Judges make a decision, they're probably not going to change their mind unless they think they're absolutely wrong. Now, in this particular case, the plain language of the statute basically says you can't video and audio record if you're going to have these witnesses who don't consent, and basically the prosecutor doesn't consent as well. The court says, hey, maybe I'm wrong, but we have a right to have our courts to be open to the public. And normally, in a situation where people could come to the courthouse, come in and out of the courthouse, the press, everyday citizen who wants to come in and watch any trial they want, isn't going to work because of the situation that we're currently in as it relates to COVID. Additionally, these overflow courtrooms in and of itself are not going to work. So let's have an open trial. Let the public see. Now, I totally agree with this decision. I would put every courtroom out on the internet for everyone to watch so everyone can see how prosecutors, defense attorneys, and judges and defendants function in court and see how things are actually done. It's not like you see on Law and Order, I assure you as that. Now, the thing that troubles me about this is the prosecution. You know, the guys that are supposed to be wearing the white hats, doing everything for justice, the American way. Why would they oppose the public seeing the evidence that they have against these four now former police officers? You would think that if the prosecution thought that their case was so overwhelming that they would want it aired to the public so that there is legitimacy to whatever decision comes out. We'll see if the court changes his mind. Somehow, I don't think he will. Maybe the appellate courts will change his mind for him. We'll simply have to wait and see. Now, next on the docket, Christmas is coming, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't done so already, hit the link below. Get your Crime Talk mug. Get your Crime Talk gear. Now, if you want to be able to, you know, start the new year off in the right way, checking out people that you maybe don't know just enough about, but maybe you want to get involved in them in some particular way, please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report that's going to give you this person's social media information. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Now, next on the docket, a lot of people may not recall, but prior to the release of the very detailed affidavit in the Letitia Stauch homicide case in Colorado Springs, Colorado, it was actually leaked. Now, not everybody had it. I remember receiving it from somebody in the middle of the night and thinking, ooh, how did this get here? I don't know who sent it to me, but all I know is I received it. And by the time we went on the show that day, the court had already unsealed the document. Well, the woman that released that sealed affidavit for an arrest warrant for Letitia Stauch, a woman by the name of Cherie Farstevet, pled guilty Monday morning just down the street here in Adams County, County Court, to attempted misconduct. In April, Ms. Farstevet accessed court filings and shared them with the media. The affidavit, which was made public days later, detailed graphic information about the disappearance and death of 11-year-old Gannon Stauch. The reasons the affidavit was sealed was they were trying to protect the integrity of the investigation, as it contained information known only to law enforcement and to persons involved in that investigation. Sometimes that can be the issue in a case. If the information becomes public, then it helps other people, for lack of a better term, plan their alibi, plan their story. So if there's information that only the police know and maybe the person accused of the crime, it helps the case. Now, Ms. Farstevet had a login to get into the court system, and she was able to get access before the seal had been lifted. The prosecutor in the Letitia Stauch case doesn't believe that the leak hurt the case against Letitia Stauch. However, what was upsetting was that Gannon's parents had not had the chance to read over and digest the information with the authorities prior to it being available online. Now, Judge Cox, who is a very good judge, he's been around a long time, sentenced Ms. Farstevet after she entered her plea, and she was ordered to pay costs for her indiscretions. She was originally facing felony charges, but they agreed to a plea bargain to a misdemeanor. Now, Ms. Farstevet was a paralegal at the Brighton City Attorney's Office, which is literally just down the road from the courthouse. She had access to it. It's unclear whether she is still employed there. But I assure you that if she goes to work at a law firm or at another attorney's office, they're probably going to run a criminal background check on her. And when you have something that involves some sort of moral turpitude, i.e. government misconduct, pretty likely you may have a difficult time obtaining employment. Now, next on the docket, a 12-year-old girl is an absolute hero. A young woman by the name of Naletta Lincoln was at home the other day by herself, and she heard a pounding in her noise, but she wasn't exactly sure because she had headphones on. When she took the headphones off, she realized that someone was actually trying to come into the house, i.e. by kicking the door open. Well, she grabbed her baseball bat, walked into the living room, and saw that the lock was busted and that he was trying to get in, this unidentified man. This unidentified man said, "Let me in." She yelled no, and she kicked the door into his face. The chain, according to the young woman, burst just as the police were pulling up and they were able to get there in time. Needless to say, her dad, a gentleman by the name of Paul Lincoln, was quite happy. Well, it turns out the police in the Woodland Police Department had been on patrol because they had a report of a prowler earlier on. They located the prowler on the Lincoln's front doorstep as he was kicking the door in and arrested him. You know, you don't see a lot of adults that would function with that much composure in a stressful situation, let alone a 12-year-old. So a true hero, and I'm glad she's safe. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, Mark Hiles is under arrest for selling methamphetamines. He's free on a $50,000 bond, and the charges are rather serious. When he was arrested and made contact with the police, he let them know that people would come over to him because they knew that he had some methamphetamine. And he denied selling it to them and that he would only give it to them. And so that was, everything was okay. But what our dumb criminal contestant of the week, Mr. Hiles, doesn't understand, you can be guilty of distribution of drugs even if there is no money exchanging hands, okay? It's distribution. Nowhere in any statute have I ever seen a requirement that money take place. If you have drugs, you give it to your friend, guess what? You just committed distribution. The classic example I remember learning was if a bunch of people were sitting around smoking dope and they're passing the marijuana cigarette back and forth, assuming it's not legal in the state you are these days. When I went to law school, it was all illegal. And guess what? It was distribution to each person that had the joint passed around to them. So Mr. Hiles is our dumb criminal contestant of the week for trying to tell the police that it's okay because I didn't accept any money. I'm just a good guy helping other people out with their methamphetamine needs. Yeah, not good, Mr. Hiles, but thank goodness for our dumb criminal contestants of the week, because they always seem to provide that teachable moment where we can discuss the law. So thank you, Mr. Hiles. And guess what? That puts you in the running to be the dumb criminal contestant winner overall for the week. And that's right, you can win a Crime Talk mug. We will find you and we will send it to you. All right, thanks for watching. That's all we have for you tonight. But please join us at 6 p.m. Mountain Time for our live. And then immediately after that, we'll be going to our Patreon live for our Patreon members as well, where you can actually call in and talk to me about anything that you would like. But you have to be a Patreon member to do that. We will see you tonight at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.